Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You are listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jaka. I'm going to try to keep this intro short because we've got a very full show today. We had Dobbs DeCourcy and Simra Mirsha come in to debate because they are both running to be the president of the Minnesota Students Association, or MSA. Elections run from March 5th to 7th, and so we hope that this debate will help you decide who you're going to cast your vote for. Alex was so kind as to moderate the debate, and so without any further ado, let's jump into it. Fair warning at the beginning, there is a tiny bit of feedback, but we get it sorted out pretty quickly.
Yeah, so hello, my name is Dobbs DeCourcy, and my running mate is Laurens, or people will call him Larry Guider. So when we first decided to run for MSA president and vice president, some key things that we were looking for on campus were, we have kind of like five pillars that we're running on, looking towards accessibility, infrastructure, campus life, equity and diversity, and outreach. And so underneath all of those pillars, we kind of have some pieces that we're working off of, obviously. And when we're looking to our pillars, we're really looking to having a lasting impact here at the university. We're looking to make some immediate changes, or at least be pieces in the clock, cogs in the clock of change. And we look forward to putting our stamp on campus, but then we're also looking to work with the communities surrounding the university. We're wanting to leave a lasting impact with future Gophers and generations of generations, letting students know that not only are they like encouraged to come to the university, but they are welcomed here at the university, which hasn't always been the narrative for many of the students in the metro area. So we're looking for, that's kind of on our outreach plan, is both internal and external, trying to get students to feel really welcome here at the university. Larry and I are working towards many efforts with that, and we both have some experience in the past where we're trying to leave that lasting impact for current and future generations.
Cool. Hi, I'm Simran Mishra. I am running for MSA president with Mina Kian as my vice president. We both use she, her pronouns. I am currently studying finance and a third year student, and Mina is studying electrical engineering, also a third year student. Together, we like to say that we've served on almost every level of student government. I joined my first year and have served in various roles. Mina joined halfway through our first year and has also served in various roles. Her current role is ranking representative to the regions, so she advocates at the region level for lowering tuition, for creating more equitable admissions practices, for creating better sexual assault and sexual misconduct policies. My current role is speaker of forum, where forum is where we have all of our 100 plus MSA members gather to pass legislation, vote on budgets. So I would say looking forward, we've done a lot of work in MSA. We know that student advocacy is a work in progress and our university is a work in progress. And looking forward, the key things that we really want to focus on next year, we have around 20 things on our platform, but the four things I would say are on the forefront of our minds are, one, supporting underrepresented students on campus. There is immense uncertainty for students under DACA, TPS, and travel ban. So supporting these students, supporting international students, as in the federal level, there's a lot of uncertainty with certain visas and certain work permits, supporting these students and generally creating a better campus climate in this overall national political climate. Second, I would say creating meaningful partnerships with our community, having the many, many involved people and involved campus clubs on our campus also contribute to MSA. Instead of MSA always seeming like we pursue our own agenda, having voices chime in that create and shape this agenda. Number three, fighting sexual assault and sexual misconduct on campus. This is something that Mina has worked on for all of her time in MSA, and this is something that we're really passionate about doing, especially seeing that this is something our administration has really prioritized as well. And finally, improving campus life for our university. So that includes dining, affordable housing, affordable textbooks, so that overall well-being of students. So I would say those are our four things that we have in the forefront of our minds, and we know from our work that student advocacy takes a lot of work and there are a lot of nuances, and we're ready for the next fight when it comes.
Great. So just again, I think I'm going to ask you questions based on some of the things you both brought up in your platforms, and I'll let you know if it's the questions are being addressed to just one of you or if it's going to be like one and then the other gets to do it. So I want to begin with Dobbs, just because of the order in which you guys gave your statements. So you mentioned that you wanted to create, like, right away you wanted to make changes, but you didn't really elaborate on what specific changes you wanted to put in effect right away. I'm wondering if you could mention some of those.
Yeah, some of the changes that we would love to see have a little more recency on campus are definitely things in terms and things. We're trying to English here today. definitely trying to work on accessibility on campus and work on some infrastructure pieces. For accessibility, we're wanting to work with the Disability Resource Center and definitely work on some, we're looking for low sensory lounges, which is something that we have been wanting for students, as to where it could be lounges, very easily made lounges in like Wilson Library and Walter, as to where spaces for students who, let's say, have a concussion or suffer from anxiety that may be induced by the surrounding environment. We could install these lounges as to where it would be a safe study space for students, where they could truly de-stress and truly focus on their work, just in case if the surrounding area isn't very viable or very accessible for them in terms of studying and getting their work done, or if they're in an apartment that's very noisy, or if at home isn't the best situation for them. That would be something that we'd look for. We also would like to advocate for circulators to be running later. That is something that we really want to push for, just to make sure that students are getting home safe at night. We know that that's been a major issue on campus and a major concern for parents. I was an orientation leader this past summer, and so I've heard the concerns of students and I've heard the concerns of parents, and things that constantly were coming up in like small group discussion and at like the parent lunch, or we called it plunch. What was constantly coming up was safety for students on campus. And due to the fact that Pioneer Hall is closed, we have more and more students who are living off campus in their first year. And we do need to make sure that those students are getting home safely in terms of like campus circulators.
Okay. And then this next question, I'm going to start with you, Simran, and then I also kind of want you to touch on it. You talked about how you've worked in all various levels of MSA government, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on why that makes you a good fit for being president.
Yeah, definitely. So MSA is a 35-person organization staff-wise. It has a 6-figure budget, and then 100 people just as members of MSA who work within MSA. So it's a very complex organization that took Mina and I both almost a year to learn even how to navigate and what it means for MSA to interact with the different student governance bodies. So what does it mean to interact with Senate or the regents or the committee directors, or how to navigate all the different offices that exist in the university? I've spent my last year in my role currently as Speaker of Forum trying to develop relationships with the various different offices, learning what they prioritize and learning exactly what barriers they have to also doing what students want to do. So those connections, I think, are key, because what it really comes down to, MSA President and VP not only are leading the student body, but they're leading a whole organization. So they're leading these 35 people who are going to come to them with questions about, how do I accomplish this? And being able to connect them to the right pieces and being that liaison between what the students need and what the organization and the administration can do is really important. I think it's that 3 years of experience, 6 years total for Mina and I, that have really helped us understand how university governance works. And that's why we're really excited to be running. But MSA, I just want to add, is not also the only thing that we've done. We've been involved in cultural groups on campus and other academic groups on campus. And I think it's really important to have that diverse perspective, because sometimes when you're just in MSA, what's actually happening outside the student body can be lost. So we think a balance is important.
And then similar to Dobbs, well, just checking real quick, have you been involved with MSA at all? Okay, so then what makes you qualified to be president without MSA experience?
Yeah, so not having any MXA experience in the past, I know, can be kind of a bit of a curveball for individuals, or it can be seen as us needing to have, Larry and I, neither of us have been involved in MSA in the past due to, like, external reasons, and it may be a bit of a learning curve for us, definitely, but we believe that we are the best individuals to be leading MSA and this MSA as an organization due to the fact that we've seen injustices on this campus, and we come with many ideas. We're both very creative individuals, but we're both very executive in what we want to do on campus. We have ideas, but we also have plans behind those ideas. Larry is a wonderful executor in his ideas and different things that he's done on campus. Both of us have been incredibly involved with different groups on campus outside of MSA, but we really think that a truly external perspective is something that MSA truly needs, and something that can really improve the group and also can give us a better idea as to how MSA can better assist in the student population.
Okay. Going back to Simran, this is a question just for you. You touched on wanting to work to help underrepresented students, and you specifically touched on DACA students. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering specifically what proposals you were hoping to push forward to help DACA students in particular.
Definitely. So us as an MSA executive board have done a lot this year, and including a campaign at a federal level. We did a video of bringing light to students under DACA, TPS, and travel ban, so that can be communicated to the government that these students matter on our campus and are their students nonetheless. And we've also just passed a resolution that gives students under DACA, TPS, and travel ban, if there's a discontinuity in their learning, they can come back and finish their degrees. So those are the two things that I've been working on with Mina and the rest of the MSA executive board. But going forward, I think MSA really needs to step up in communication, and the university really needs to step up in providing online distance learning to these students. So setting up infrastructure IT-wise for professors to be able to create online modules for their classes, so that if there is a discontinuity, students can still continue learning. I myself am also an international student, so that piece can also be very important, because there's so much discontinuity, like there's a lot of uncertainty at the federal level with any visas or anything might happen. So if you're abroad, I think it puts a lot of students under different visa statuses at rest, and also gives students under DACA, TPS, a little more certainty, knowing that the university is ready to stand up for them and help them give that academic stability. And the other piece that we really want to push is financial stability. So the immigration response team just set up a dream fund this year, and we really envision creating more advocacy and more programming around, bringing more funds to that dream fund.
Great. And so this next question is going to be for both of you, and you both sort of alluded to and touched on it. Simran, you kind of alluded to it more specifically, the housing issue going on with students, and you also touched on it in one of your later remarks. What do you feel as MSA president you could do to help students with kind of the messy housing situation around you that I think has really been, you know, the Daily's done a great job reporting about the I'm forgetting the name of the specific apartment complex, but
Prime Place,
yes.
Or now it's Arrow.
Yes,
it's
now
the Arrow.
Yes, I remember that. I'd have to drive by it, but specifically with places like Prime Place and landlords taking advantage of students, what do you feel like as president you could do to help students with kind of the turbulent housing situation going on? And we'll start with Dobbs, and then go right to you, Simran.
Yeah, I think something that'll be incredibly important in the role of president is creating that line of communication. There is so much uncertainty with housing right now, and students just feel as though that they're not informed as to what's going on. There's only so much reading that you can do individually, but the access that the president of MSA would have to like larger groups of individuals, and also having a voice that is more prevalent and more prominent with those who, like, in higher powers, like within the Board of Regents, and also working with the president and provost on campus to really push forward policies. I think MSA has done a really awesome job with their Break Up With Your Landlord campaign. I know Bianca Naquanta, those videos have been hilarious and really informative, and just being able to work with MSA in order to learn about who kind of the, for lack of a better word, sketchy landlords are, and for the individuals who may not be the most fair in working with students in order to get affordable housing. And in terms of Arrow, I think that there could be a lot more done on like a federal level, at least within the state of Minnesota. We can definitely work with our Board of Regents in order to pass legislation and to move things in the House in order to make sure that places like Arrow never pop up in our area again. We see the overall price of housing increasing at the top level. Housing for students is becoming incredibly unaffordable. And due to the fact that everybody's raising their premiums and they're raising the highest levels of their housing costs, the medians will rise for all students. If we are able to make more of an outcry from students, and make sure that the Board of Regents does hear from us, I think that the president can be a megaphone for those students on a higher level.
And then going right to you on the housing.
Yeah, so I will talk about the two portions I think that your question was getting at. The first, affordable housing. I think it's really important to continue the work that we're doing at the city level with city councilors and local legislators to keep pushing in their own wards for affordable housing. The Board of Regents, because most housing is off campus and doesn't fall on the campus, it's not really in their jurisdiction. So it really falls on us to make sure that we're at all of these housing meets and all the town halls and all the different city meetings, which MSA has been doing, representing the student voice. So whether that's Marcy, whether that's Stadium Village, Prospect Park, having student representation, because most of those decisions at those meetings are being made by richer, older, predominantly white men. So when students aren't at those meetings, student voices just aren't heard, and people think students are okay with the prices. So the first thing for affordable housing is, when new proposals are coming for housing, having those students, key students, be at those meetings is very, very important. The two, I will talk about the predatory practices that landlords tend to have. So landlords like the Arrow, MSA just put out last semester the D list, and along with the breakup with your landlord campaign, that D list is crucial in making sure that's publicized and updated. And the issue with the D list and issues with places like Prime Place is they just close and they rebrand or they create a new name where they come up as a corporation as a whole. So MSA really needs to be on top of it and making sure that this message goes out. And the other part in there is that message should be catered to the most vulnerable populations on campus as well. We're strongly, strongly passionate about making sure that international students especially, and transfer students and first-generation students, are communicated to in specialized ways, because when it comes to signing a lease, that like three weeks you may have between your lease ending and your next lease starting, some students even don't even know. And when you're an international student, where do you go for those 3 weeks? So being more transparent about practices like that, that can be predatory. International students are often charged bogus fees at the end of a lease because the landlords know that they can take advantage of that. So that's something that the D list hasn't really looked into. And that's something that we want to bring more advocacy around.
Yeah. And then going right back to you, Simran. Dobbs, you kind of touched on this directly on how, since you're not being an MSA, you want to bring your outside voice in. But you also touched on, I think, in your opening statement, wanting to go and bring more outside voices into MSA. And can you elaborate on what you mean by trying to bring other voices in?
Yeah, I definitely can. So the second point that I mentioned, creating meaningful partnerships with our community, we want to set up a formal structure of doing outreach. I think MSA has every year said, we'll do more outreach, but because there hasn't been structure around it, we haven't seen an output. So we want to create real structure around this. So it's not just a promise, but it's actually an action. So the action looks like setting up advisory boards that have representation from different members of different communities to advise MSA and guide us on the legislation we push. So we would like to see an advisory board on college boards. Mina and I have actually been going around to all the college boards and seeking feedback, and college boards are really interested in participating in something like this. An advisory board with multicultural groups, an advisory board with veteran ROTC students, an advisory board with student parents, an advisory board with athletics, Greek life. So that list kind of continues. So when we do advocacy, say around improving St. Paul infrastructure, we can go to that college board group, you know, pull out CFAN, CDES, CVS, CHD representation, and work together on a comprehensive St. Paul plan. When we talk about wanting to do more advocacy around sexual assault or sexual misconduct, we can go to the multicultural advisory board or the Greek advisory board and have those different voices chime in and make sure that any advocacy or any programming we put out is representative of all the voices that are affected on the community by it. Because I think MSA often relies on the individuals within MSA to stand up for their own community, which can be not a great burden to live with in the organization. And that's why we really want to do more meaningful outreach with the community to bring those voices in.
Similar on that note, to Dobbs, you talked about similarly wanting to work with various communities and wanting to shift the narrative about the university within different communities. Can you elaborate more on what that would look like and what you would want to do with that?
Yeah, so we're looking to the metro area that we have. This has been an idea that Larry had proposed, and I'm full for it. Larry has lived in both Chicago and the suburbs of Chicago, and so he has this awesome experience and idea and knowledge as to what students in a metro area are looking at when it's coming to college. So what we're wanting to do is to actually have student representatives from MSA, from different cultural groups, to come together and to create a sort of advisory board that can go out into these communities, because it can take just one voice to tell a little student to say, hey, college is accessible for you. I know we also have had issues in the past with like a lot of rural students. There currently is a crisis in rural areas where there is a brain drain from individuals where they aren't seeing enough medical professionals and dental professionals in rural areas, and also in more metro communities, due to the fact that these students aren't being told from a young age that college is feasible for them and that college is something that they can strive for and is something that they can do. And while college is not something that is for everybody, it doesn't have to be, and that's the way that university systems work. We want to give that accessibility and that opportunity for all students. And so we believe that that really starts with advocacy within the community surrounding the university.
Okay. And then this next question is going to be for both of you, but I'm going to begin with you, Simran. And again, it's another thing you talked about. You talked about wanting to work with sexual harassment policy, wanting to work with sexual harassment policies. You largely identified the work that your vice president was doing. I was wondering if you could elaborate on specific changes that have been done and that you would like to see continued going forward within sexual harassment policy here at the university.
Sure. So I think the most recent change that I'll speak on is all student employees now becoming mandatory reporters. That's something that a lot of student employees, A, are not aware of, or B, if they're aware of, don't know what that means. And being a mandatory reporter is a really great step in our university, and I'm glad that the administration has prioritized it so much. But we really want to make sure that students understand fully what it means to be a mandatory reporter. Even when we look at faculty numbers, I think around 30% of all faculty have taken that 30 or 60 minute module on what it means to be a mandatory reporter. So there's this huge gap in passing policy and then also creating more awareness about what this policy means and what it entails. So going forward, that's what we want to focus on, is focusing on, yes, we've done and we have all these great policies in place, but what does that mean for the university communicating what those policies mean? And that can often be the gap between administration and students, is administration wants to do these things but isn't communicating to students what that means. And then the second thing, it's really important to us that we focus on, as you know, these policies and programming are discussed, we focus on the voices of marginalized students, students of color, students in the queer community are disproportionately affected by sexual assault, sexual misconduct, and disproportionately also don't report it. So I think it's very important that while the university is taking these steps policy-wise, MSA fill in with the programming to reach out to the communities that are disproportionately affected and make sure that the voices that we have on this issue speaking to the university about it are representative of all the students on campus.
And similar question to you, Dobbs. What would, if you were to be president of MSA, what would you, steps would you take to address sexual misconduct and sexual assault on campus?
Yeah, so I believe that the work that has been done has been very crucial and vital, especially around mandatory reporters. But that also can be an incredibly large burden on the individuals, especially if they don't know what mandatory reporting is. I think something that's key is for mandatory reporters to have more training and to make sure that they are understanding as to what it means and that they are vocalizing this to students. Because you can have a student who can lose trust in a mandatory reporter, which is incredibly detrimental for students who are trying to come forward. But making sure that these mandatory reporters are giving out information as to where confidential individuals and non-mandatory reporters are on campus, and being able to give out those resources like the Aurora Center as to where students are able to discuss this. Another piece of this is sexual assault training, and the creation of rape culture starts at a young age. And so something that I would really like to be seen, especially with our community outreach, is to work with the College of Education and Human Development and start working on different directives and different programs and curricula for young students in terms of teaching about how, like, to dismantle rape culture, but at age-appropriate levels. And I'm no expert in terms of curriculum, but I do come from a family of all educators, and something that they've been seeking is a more comprehensive look. And the University of Minnesota is an A1 research university, and we do develop many curricula, and we are kind of a pillar of the North. So people do look to our education systems that we develop here at the university, and I think that would be an awesome opportunity for us to work and create sexuality training and curriculum for younger students so we can dismantle the system where it starts.
Okay. And then next question, and again, I'm going to throw this to both of you, starting at you, Dobbs, and then go to you, Simran. I think a big issue on this campus for the last 2 years has been the free speech issue. We've had paint the bridge incidents both last year and this year, and then building anger and protests about various speakers coming. Most recently, there's a building anger about Ben Shapiro coming and talking. How do you plan on trying to handle these conflicting sides and conflicting issues around bringing these very controversial speakers and handling issues of free speech here on campus?
In terms of free speech, we all know it's an incredibly gray area. But what I want to reiterate is that hate speech is not free speech. And I know that we do have different portions in place in the student conduct code as to where that isn't welcome on our campus. And we do take different steps that are outside of governmental, I don't know, is that a word? We'll call it a word. Respectability politics is crap anyways. Outside of that. And so I believe that we do need to work more on the beliefs of how hate speech is not free speech. And also be teaching that, yes, you may have the freedom of speech, but you do not have freedom from consequence here on campus. And something that we can do, and something that I've been kind of formulating, is looking to document the history of hate that we've had on campus. Because if we don't record this history of issues within free speech or speakers who students disagree with on campus, there's potential for it to be repeated again if there is more white lash in the future from having the potential for a more liberal or to be bipartisan, anti-bipartisan government. If we do have more like a Democratic House, Senate, and presidency, we'd be able to document this and realize that it's not okay in any sense on campus. And in terms of having speakers on campus, there is a there are students on campus who do want to hear from these individuals. I personally am not a huge fan of Ben Shapiro or any other individuals who do spew a lot of hate speech and hateful rhetoric on campus. But those are, unfortunately, voices that are on campus that feel as though that they're being marginalized as to where they don't feel as though that they're welcome on campus. And so the more marginalization that they feel, the more vocal they're going to be about it, which can create more cycles of hatred on campus.
And moving to you with this question about how to handle issues of speech on campus.
Sure, yeah. So I agree with Dobbs that there really needs to be a clear distinction between free speech and hate speech. And I think where that line is really unclear is with administration. Administration has been extremely ambiguous in their definition of free speech versus hate speech. And that's when, you know, you mentioned in your question the Paint the Bridge incident that happened. The response confused and hurt a lot of communities on campus because from the get-go, administration wasn't clear about what defines hate speech and free speech. So I think where MSA really needs to step in is A, making sure that no community feels hurt like that. And when the university isn't standing up for communities that are hurt, that MSA is standing up for the communities that are hurt. And B, pushing the administration to create more defined kind of that distinction between free speech versus hate speech and having that be very present and publicized. Because then when it comes time to, you know, whatever speakers come on campus or whatever incidents or whatever they say, then there's very clear policies that we can go back to and advocate around. And that's actually something MSA is working on. I believe University of Michigan just passed a free speech policy, and we're looking at how to pull elements from that and apply it to our own university or student code of conduct and have that create more definition. So that's something that we're currently working on in MSA right now.
And then final question, kind of a softball, easy question, but if you had to kind of give the voting populace a main point or a main takeaway for what you represent and what your campaign has to offer, like what's the quick pitch about what you're going to do, what you're going to offer someone who might be looking to vote for you? And we'll go Dobbs, Simran, and then close it out.
Yeah, so Larry and I, just kind of jokingly in the past, we've said we're two radical dudes here to make some radical change on campus. We've both seen injustices here on the university, through our communities and through different systems that have been in place, and we want to dismantle those systems. So what we're trying to do here on campus is really make it an accessible campus for individuals. We often hear, conversations about equity and diversity on campus, and how we need to increase those. But the only way that we're going to make a more equitable university and increase diversity on campus is if we break down those barriers that are creating an inequitable and inaccessible university. So if you are giving a vote for Dobbs and Larry and our campaign, we would love for you to know that we're trying to make this university that may seem like an ocean, we want it to feel like a pond. The university is a massive place full of 60,000 students, 38,000 undergrads, and we'll have probably 6,200 incoming first-year students, freshman students, and then many more transfer students in this upcoming year. But we want to make it seem like a campus that is conquerable. We want to make your time at the university seem accessible and something that isn't this scary ocean full of sharks. We want it to seem like a pond that you're able to skip rocks across and really leave your mark here and leave your stamp here at the university. And so a vote for Dobbs and Larry is a vote for just that.
Cool. So, yep. So this is Simran with Mina Heehan. And I would say for us, we've been working for the past 3 years in student government, in cultural groups to improve our campus, to make MSA more accessible, to do all the things that we want to do as MSA President and VP. We've been working on that for the past 3 years. And if we are elected, if you do cast for a vote for us, you can be certain that we will be supporting underrepresented students on campus, certain that we'll be fighting for affordable housing and better dining, certain that we will address rape culture and fight sexual assault and sexual misconduct, and also certain that we will create more meaningful partnerships with our community and bring more and more voices, especially voices that are continuously barred from student government and MSA, into our conversations, and make sure that all of our advocacy really reflects how diverse and different experiences that are actually reflected in our student body. So a vote for Simran and Mina is a vote for, you know, two women who have worked for the last 3 years in trying to make our university better. And regardless of whether they will be MSA president or in VP or not, they will continue fighting for every student here.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for participating and debating today.
thank you. Alex.
That's all for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Special thank you to Dobbs and Simran for coming in. A very huge thank you to Will Cushion for running the board. I literally would not have been able to do this without you, because that board is so complicated. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Alex Schumacher, Liv Riggins, and Emily Allen. I'm your host and managing editor, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in every Monday at 6:30 for more arts and cultural coverage.